There you go. All right, we're gonna do it.
And yeah, we hop back and forth. It's cheap.
All right. Welcome everyone to the beautiful BMW Expo Center. This lovely white driving machine over here. I am Ryan J. Salva, aka Pat Sajak for the day. We're gonna be talking a little bit about working with open source and Microsoft and all of these fine gentlemen from organizations that are not Microsoft. So we're gonna spend the next 20 minutes just kind of exploring what it actually means to work on open source projects, how that has really kind of changed the way that technology gets consumed, not only from a consumer perspective, but from a developer perspective, and from the perspective of companies that actually like need to make money in the end on open source technologies. So let's just kind of go from the far side to here. Max, introduce yourself. Tell us who you are.
Name's Max Lynch. I co-founded and created Ionic. It's an open source toolkit for web developers to build mobile apps.
Awesome. All right. Brian.
I'm Brian. I work at a company called Begin. I used to work at Adobe, and before that, Nitobe, and the whole PhoneGap thing might have been partially my fault. Sorry.
All right.
Sorry about that.
James.
Hi, I'm James. I co-founded and work on a thing called Exponent, which is a React Native-based platform for mobile development.
All right. And Jesse, the legendary Jesse.
I'm Jesse McFadden, aka Purple Cabbage on the internets. I worked with Brian a long time ago at a company called Nitobe, helped create PhoneGap, which became Apache Cordova. And I've pretty much been working on Apache Cordova ever since Adobe acquired Nitobe in 2011. So very much open source all the way.
Awesome. All right. So now that we know who you are, let's start talking a little bit about, like, clearly all of these technologies, all these people here are like some of the leading luminaries of JavaScript development at large, and especially when applied to mobile development. So I'm going to start just by asking a little bit about how JavaScript has really influenced mobile development, particularly over the course of the last 3 years or so. And maybe actually, James, coming from the React Native side of things, I'll start with you. Like, how is JavaScript changing the way that developers approach mobile development?
Well, we've seen with React Native, it's really changed how not just people write code, but how your whole workflow functions. So with JavaScript, because it's so much more dynamic than a language like Objective-C or Java and C#, we find that you edit your JavaScript code and you can just use modern JavaScript techniques like hot module reloading. So just to swap out a single JavaScript module while you're in your app. You may be building a complicated app and go several screens deep, and you edit some JavaScript module to say, I want my background color to go from dark blue to light blue. You save that file. We send it over to the device and evaluate on the fly, and you see those changes right away. So we get this kind of live coding that has not been possible with Objective-C, and up until now hasn't really been possible on Android either. So that's been really exciting. We've also seen that JavaScript on, I think, all the platforms that we're going to talk about today allow you to dynamically ship updates. So you publish a shell to the Microsoft Store, the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store, and then on your own schedule, you can ship updates, bug fixes, whatever, to your users. So it's a much less disruptive experience for them as well. So that's been really positive.
Yeah. It's like, it's worth pointing out that CodePush itself is a Microsoft open source contribution to the React Native project here. In fact, and one that works for Cordova as well. Yeah?
Sweet.
Yeah. All right. So, Brian, you've got a long and storied history in JavaScript development at large. Like, how have you seen JavaScript shifting in the way that developers use it from the web to mobile?
Okay, so like the gig is, this whole JavaScript thing was an accident. Nobody planned this, nobody wanted this. No one was like, oh, this is a great idea. Am I on? Okay, I'm on. So the accident of history is that browsers were federated, and there was a bunch of browsers, and so there was a bunch of browser vendors. And all these browser vendors were kind of like incentivized to have more users. In order to get more users, you'd have a more performant browser. And so the JavaScript war of like creating the best VM started with V8. And once that kicked off, it became really obvious that the most best engineers were working on JavaScript engines, wherever they might be, and Chakra is an excellent example of this. Like, we're seeing JavaScript just get worked on so hard, and people are like, oh, there's no more performance to be eked out. Every year, we're seeing more and more better performance. Like, the web isn't going to lose, right? Like, this is probably obvious. It should be obvious. And so JavaScript is a de facto standard of the web. It's just going to keep getting better and better and better. So kind of knew that early in the Cordova days, and we're like, this is a fairly safe bet. If you build on top of this platform, you're only going to see it improve over time. I think the thing we didn't expect was to see that JavaScript would actually break out of the web and then become its own mess. And now we see that with Node, we see it with React Native. Like, JavaScript has become its own machine outside of all of this. And yeah, that's kind of the predicate for like a lot of this thinking.
I mean, like, it is the, like, are there any other languages that run both client-side and server-side? Certainly not with that much ubiquity as JavaScript. I actually don't even know of other languages that run both client-side and server-side, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, well, all of them are going to, because, you know, Brendan Eich and David Herman figured out the WASM hack, and now we're going to see WASM spread out. And so the interesting thing about JavaScript is it's going to die. So, you know, Flash, Alert, JavaScript's going to go away, and it's going to become the bytecode for any other language. So
I don't think it'll ever go away. I think.
Yeah. Sure. I mean,
I tweeted today the singularity will be written in JavaScript, and someone will quickly refresh the browser, and we'll all be OK.
It'll need to be better typed, which is also interesting to show how prescient Microsoft's been in all of this.
I would still argue that it doesn't need that. That's just people wanting to push their own way of developing into JavaScript, which they've managed to do through TypeScript.
Yeah. Maybe. And herein you can see the awesome culture that we built at Nitoya, where like we fully would debate each other on this stuff. I think typing is probably important, but like that's neither here nor there. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, we're going to have a universal bytecode in the next 3 to 5 years, which means that whatever fucking language that you're writing in, C# or JavaScript or whatever, is just going to compile down to the same bits. And those bits will run with the same speed on any platform that you want. We're already seeing hints of this everywhere. So it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, if you're into JavaScript, good for you. It'll work for a long time. It'll work everywhere in the past.
Very long time. Yeah. So I kind of want to, a lot of us, all of us here in one capacity contribute to open source. And there's a certain amount of that that is because, well, our companies, you know, it pays the bills. But there's a part of that as well that is a philosophical decision about kind of why we find satisfaction in our jobs, right? And so maybe I'll turn to you, Max. Like, why do you personally, not as a matter of career, but as a matter of just like what brings you satisfaction in your job, why do you contribute to open source?
I can't imagine a better way to reach so many people through technology than open source. Like, you can build something that anyone can go and download for free, can modify, can understand, can like, you know, depend on because they have the code. And you just can't really do that with proprietary software. So when we started Ionic, like, you know, we decided to build a business around it, but at the end of the day, like, the best part about building Ionic is building this open source community that is kind of like totally transcended everything that it was in the beginning. And you just don't see that with proprietary software. So part of it's the impact, and part of it's just, you know, accessibility with millions of developers around the world.
Yeah, yeah. James, how about you, man?
I would say open source is a great way to get adoption of a technology platform. When a platform is free, everyone from like high school students to hobbyists are going to adopt it, and they're going to write answers about on Stack Overflow and help each other and teach each other, compared to proprietary platforms where that's just not necessarily been the case. So I think actually with the open source scene of Xamarin that's coming up, we're going to see a lot more people trying out Xamarin, and the Stack Overflow tag for Xamarin to actually grow because of that.
I mean, I can tell you, having given, like, presented at innumerable conferences about Cordova and about cross-platform technologies, Xamarin, like, the question you all ask every time is, when's the price going to change? That's too big of a barrier, right? Like, that's always the thing.
Yeah.
And now that it's been eliminated, essentially, right, I would expect that it will absolutely dominate when it comes to actual customer adoption and developer adoption. Like,
totally.
No question about it.
Totally.
So, like, all right, there's that aspect of it where why we contribute personally, but then there's, you know, I kind of wiped the employers aside for a second, but in the end, any technology, in order for us to sustain ourselves over time, has to be able to make money. And there's a lot of big organizations, Microsoft included, that's really amped up its participation in open source over the course of the last couple of years in particular, right? So Adobe is like has been a big sponsor of open source through PhoneGap and through Cordova for at least, 5 years now, right?
Yep.
5 years. So help us understand why Adobe participates in the open source ecosystem and has poured so much of their engineering dollars into that.
Well, I think the big reason that PhoneGap became very popular with Adobe was the fact that we had created this huge community, and the fact that we had been open source and we had promised that we would always be open source, open a ton of doors for us, so we could go. We would be flown to conferences to speak because we didn't have this huge profit motive. We were really just trying to make a better platform that we would use ourselves for our own consulting customers, but ultimately we would try to get everything that we could contributed back into PhoneGap.
Yep.
And that really transferred to Adobe just in the fact that we had become sort of experts in building a mobile framework that was used by lots and lots of people, and being, you know, community builders as well. So,
sure.
So bringing that into Adobe was the win for them. And over the time that we've been with Adobe, we've been working on getting other teams involved in using, you know, PhoneGap tooling to do their own thing instead of duplicating efforts on different products.
Yeah. Now,
so that's sort of an ongoing goal that we've been working on.
So, Max, I would assume that there's some parallels there between why Ionic took the open source approach to kind of evangelizing or spreading the word of Ionic Framework as a startup, right? Because you guys have got a very unique set of circumstances compared to an established organization like Adobe that already has Photoshop and Illustrator to depend upon for revenue streams. How did the decision to go open source really impact Ionic's business plan?
I think we felt like the space at the time when we started Ionic couldn't handle another proprietary option. You know, like I think that was kind of like, if you were going to introduce another proprietary thing, like it was going to compete against ones that were already there, and it probably was going to fall flat. But making it more open than what was there was how we were going to kind of differentiate ourselves in the beginning. And in the last 2 or 3 years, like all those technologies have gone very open.
Yeah,
so that really changed in the last few years. So for us, that was the initial start. And like now, I mean, part of what you get with open source is you get a community of people who feel invested in it. And you know, if a project takes off and becomes successful, it would be very challenging for a team that's selling this open source thing to support the community effectively. So you have to have a community that's willing to help each other, otherwise it just wouldn't scale. You know, like our forum, for example, is the absolute best place to get help about Ionic, and there's millions of people on there, and we could not support that with our small team. So I think that's one of the reasons, just have a bigger impact and maximize our ability to like help this community.
Yeah, so I get that going open source helps attract a larger community by reducing barriers, right? Making it free, that's a big freaking barrier. But clearly there are downsides to open sourcing as well that can have a kind of a negative impact on the business. Like Brian, as someone who's gone through the process of open sourcing PhoneGap from the Natobi days to the transition to Adobe and going through the Apache Foundation, like, what are the negative sides to open sourcing a technology?
It's a massively loaded question.
That's a massively loaded question.
Yeah.
I know.
So,
I laid it on you like that.
So the people are tough, right? Like, so the whole thing is that we're working with different stakeholders that have sort of different motivations, and we're also working in an industry that's like massively challenged in its own understanding of itself right now. So like, you know, we've got an old school that was frankly quite used to being vitriolic and non-inclusive and generally white males, like this panel. And like, you know, so like there was that aspect, and then this new GitHub generation came about, and open source got massively democratized, even just by GitHub. And that shift, and then us joining Apache, which was kind of like an old school organization, was hugely challenging. So like we met this new group of people who were this old school open source that knew everything. They were like, yeah, you just use SVN and, you know, Jira or whatever. And we're like, come on, man, we want to be on GitHub. And there was flame wars, which are ridiculous when you think about it now. Like, our industry has come a long way in the last 5 years in how we interact with each other now that we have code of conducts and we understand, like, you know, being good to each other might actually foster better development.
There's still a lot of vitriol out there. I've been on some Twitter flame wars that got pretty nasty.
I mean, it's tough. If you're a part of, like, Cordova or PhoneGap or Microsoft, for that matter, like, you're going to get some shit thrown at you. And there's no end to the opinions. You have to sort of deal with it with grace, and you have to move forward and figure out what motivates you and do the right thing by your community and yourself. And it's tough, you know? And all these problems are non-technical. Like, they're all people
being
problems.
A moral, ethical person is tough. You know? Online, behind the curtain of anonymity, you know? It tempts the worst of us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'd say that'd be it. That's the tough part. It's worth it though. I mean, when you see the outcome of working in the open, you meet tons of people. You learn and grow so much. The benefits outweigh the drawbacks, but the drawbacks are harsh.
Yeah. All right. So I want to also ask, like, we all know that, in particular, in the last 2 years, Microsoft has considerably increased its participation in open source. I know
big time.
With my team, my team is the Tools for Apache Cordova team. We also do some tooling with React Native and CodePush. And so our participation in open source has really increased over the last 2 years. How has that impacted the kind of the projects that you guys work inside of and the way that your businesses operate as well? And maybe, Max, I'll start with you.
So one thing that we've been fortunate to do is have weekly meetings with the TypeScript team. Yep. So, you know, Microsoft has been able to help us build better versions of Ionic, and also, like, build better tooling. That's kind of what we think is how you should have tooling around Ionic inside of Visual Studio, et cetera. So just working with us, helping us, giving us the opportunity to come to things like Build, that's been really great.
Yeah, totally. I'll go down the line. Brian?
I mean, Microsoft's got decades of experience in this. There's no question that this company builds best-of-class developer tooling, always has. I think Microsoft, for a brief period of time, was kneecapped because of its hubris, and it found a better way in the last few years. And it's actually, I'd say last 6 years, frankly. It's been a while. Like, everyone's like, oh, this is a brand new Microsoft. This new Microsoft's been happening for a long time. Yeah. And
I mean, like, Microsoft itself actually brought me out of the web development community 5 years ago, right?
Yeah.
With Windows 8.
When it all changed.
Yeah, that's
it. So it was you, right?
You heard it here, folks. Right when I came on board, things really turned around. Yeah.
But I've seen this. The shift, like, happened, and it was really organic, and it came from the employees. It wasn't a top-down thing. Like, Ballmer didn't decide to make things better, that's for sure. And, like, we're seeing this shift, like, slowly culminate into what we have today. But, like, this company knows developers, it knows tools, it knows where the new trends are. It's given up on hope that, you know, it can be the monopolistic owner of, like, all things, which, harsh to say, but it is the fact. It's opened up to, like, all the different platforms. Like, you know what? Listen, like, this tech thing is way bigger than all of us. Let's do the best job that we can and bring our expertise to the open community. And they're doing a great job of it. You are doing a great job of it.
Awesome. Good. All right. James, how about you, man?
So from the React Native perspective, I think there are two exciting opportunities for Microsoft to contribute. We're seeing Microsoft build on top of React Native with projects like CodePush, allowing you to deploy your code very easily. And then at the same time, React Native also has a lot of opportunity ahead of it. It's a very nascent and young project, and so I think over the coming year, we'll probably see a lot of great Windows-targeted React Native projects. Like, right now, it's kind of more for iOS and Android, but, like, people have demos of React Native running on top of OS X, for instance, and other platforms. Well, Windows is sort of like a logical next step, and so it'd be exciting to see more projects in that direction as well.
Yeah, all right. Jesse, I'll let you close it out, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, One thing that happens in open source, or can happen in open source, is that people go and they work on the most exciting things to them. And one of the things that I thought was great when Microsoft came on is you guys looked at what needed to be done, not what you thought was most exciting for your own gains. So when Microsoft came on, they came on very respectfully as well. You know, and came on and said, what is the best way for us to contribute? Do you want all of us pushing pull requests, or do you want several of us to be sort of the main point of contact with Cordova, and they manage pull requests? And so it was all very good, because when Microsoft came on, it was 20-something developers all at the same time started digging into the code.
It came in force, no doubt about that.
It can be a situation where some companies would come in, they would try to take over the project, or they would try to push their own motivation and say, well, let's rewrite all of this in the way that we like to do this. Let's make Cordova all TypeScript.
Yep.
Or, I mean, there's all kinds of things that could have happened, but it was all done with respect to the way that things had already been operated.
Come on, Jesse, trash on Google. You want to do it.
I didn't say it about Google. I mean, there is code that's been written that I wish had never been written. and there are modules that I won't look at just because I know how they are written.
If anyone wants the story behind that one, we'll do that one off stage.
Yeah.
But it was great the way that Microsoft approached it.
Awesome.
That is true though. Like I want to back that up. Like the way that Microsoft interacts with Apache and Cordova is amazing. It's been a pleasure. And it's been interesting.
It's been a pleasure for us as well. And we're actually, unfortunately, out of time, but I do want everyone to give a hand, please, for Max Lynch of Ionic, Brian LaRue of Begin, James Ide of Exponent, Jesse McFadden of Adobe. Enjoy the rest of the conference. Have an awesome time.